This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media. My name is Jim Santel, and I'm sitting in today for Maggie on this beautiful afternoon in early August in the state of Wisconsin in the United States of America. Thank you so much for joining me and my terrific producer, who is here today in the studio with me to take your phone calls as well. Jess and I will be delighted and interested to hear your questions, your comments, your inquiries about the subject matters on our syllabus for this hour and also next hour. The number that Jess and I will be reachable at is 855-752-4842. That number once again is 855-752-4842. My name is Jim Santel, sitting in today for this hour and next hour for Maggie as a part of the Maggie Dawn Show. Delighted to have you with me this afternoon. Honored that you're a part of our discussion here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media. We're going to be spending a lot of the time today talking about some recent events in the news, much of it related to the campaign for the presidency here in 2024. The things that we've reported on here on Civic Media in the past couple of days, including the presence of the present Democratic ticket in the state of Wisconsin, along with the presence of the vice presidential candidate on the Republican ticket, all of that focusing a lot of attention on the state of Wisconsin among the six or seven major swing states in this election 2024, likely Wisconsin to be among those deciding who the next president of the United States of America will be. Today, reporting on some significant news in the area of elections generally, including our continuing focus on past elections and fake electors, and in particular, the status of a case pending in Arizona. We're going to talk about some recent events in that matter, including some reporting, interestingly, coming out of a grand jury that apparently did in fact want to indict a present candidate for the presidency as a part of its action in that state. We'll talk all about that, do some legal analysis of what that all means, and then also much related to our leadership in America and the challenges of providing a safe and secure environment for all candidates to be candidates and campaign in our nation. The announcement just yesterday that the Justice Department is charging a Pakistani man in an alleged plot to kill United States leaders. Violence stopped by the good work of the FBI and the Department of Justice generally, but also underscoring the concerns, the profound concerns that all of us have about candidates in the public domain, certainly those for the presidency, but others likewise who are in the public domain in the attention of people. And also the attention of people from other nations who may come here to try to influence our own elections. We're going to talk about that. And then we're going to do, especially in our second hour, some reporting, some analysis on some of the news stories that have not gotten a lot of attention. Some of it because of the timing of their release here in America and in the state of Wisconsin. Some of it just because it gets overtaken by other major news items. We'll be talking about those items as well. But we begin this afternoon here on the Maggie Dawn Show with some commentary, some fascinating commentary about conspiracies in America, conspiracy theorists in particular who purport to say, to report on, to confirm the existence of things that simply are not true, demonstrably untrue, false statements, and yet they continue to do just that. Some very interesting reporting coming out of NewsGuard just in the past couple of days. That's a company that monitors online misinformation, and also followed up on by the New York Times, following up on this additional reporting having to do with concepts of conspiracy theories, in particular focusing upon the outlandish idea that President Joseph Biden, our president, was dead or nearly dead during the course of his recent bout with COVID-19. We're going to talk about that particular reporting, why it is important, and why this kind of conspiracy theory, manipulation, presentation, reporting out there is so very counterproductive, not only to information, but also to the ways in which we engage with one another. Let's talk about exactly what it is that the New York Times and NewsGuard are reporting. Begins with this very interesting, tantalizing report that a podcaster recently said that President Biden was dying or possibly dead. A host on Newsmax requested proof of life. And a former Republican congressman simply asked, does anyone else think Joe Biden is dead? Well, again, NewsGuard, this is that company that monitors online misinformation. And as we all know, there is a lot of it out there. Identified no fewer than 19 prominent accounts on X, formerly known as Twitter, in the month of July alone. And they were sharing, they were perpetrating this idea that Joe Biden, our president, was potentially dead or close to dead. Completely wrong. Completely unsupported by relevant information coming not just from the White House, but confirmed by presence of the president in the public domain. The New York Times followed up on this information to similarly account for who is doing this? What kinds of things they're saying? How very counterproductive they are, not just in the area, I'm not going to call it journalism, but in the area of misinformation peddling in our nation. And it certainly reflects upon the broader issues related to conspiracy theories having to do with all sorts of things that now muddy and muddle our public discussion. The conversation about Joe Biden on X Twitter that featured the word dead or died, according to all of this recent reporting, received nearly 500,000 mentions, almost 500,000 mentions, and more than 4 million interactions over a one-week period in July alone. That is stunning. That is dramatic. Two of the most popular posts advancing this completely unfounded conspiracy theory for consumption by those Americans who would buy into this craziness together received more than 85 million views. The Times, then following up on this initial reporting about this catastrophic, this terrible reporting by people who purport to know things when in fact they do not, people who purport to be responsible when in fact they are not, the Times reached out to all 19 accounts that Newsmax had identified, and they did this kind of sampling. This gives you some sense of the kind of thing that is out there and the kind of destructive thing that's out there that is attempting to provide false information, misinformation, not only in the political domain, but in other areas as well. Terrence Williams, who is a comedian on NewsGuard's list, still believes that, quote, Joe Biden is dying. Laura Loomer, a right-wing influencer, said in an interview that she stands by her reporting and clarified that when she reported that Joe Biden was terminally ill, she only meant that he had less than a year to live. A spokesman for a fellow named Charlie Kirk, who's a podcaster, said that Kirk's post was based on police speculation and that Charlie assumed he was very much alive, even though he was reporting to the contrary. There's a fellow named Stu Peters, who's an influencer and a radio host, said in a discreet statement that Joe Biden's administration still had not provided legitimate proof of life. And the other 15 people among this 19 did not respond to requests for comment. All of that, sowing doubts, unfounded doubts about the condition of our president, Joe Biden, even after his public appearances, suggesting that he was terminally ill or that somehow his handlers at the White House were using a body double, some of them were indicating. Mentions of the term body double itself, according to this reporting, on X, formerly Twitter, from July 23 to the 25, jumped 74% from the two previous days, according to Sarah Comer and Jack Brewster, reporter and editor at NewsGuard, who produced this report. All of this reporting coming out again from Newsmax and also the New York Times. All of these reports indicating things that are plainly not true, and underscoring the reason why I'm highlighting this afternoon on this broadcast of Civic Media on the Maggie Dawn Show, is the significance of these people. Irresponsible, yes. Reckless, yes. But more than that, destructive and plainly using the airwaves, which are open under our First Amendment, under our mechanisms, under the Federal Communications Commission, giving people broad breath to speak. But nonetheless, the obligation that every single person who goes on the air, who purports to be an influencer of some kind, has got to be held responsible. And then in those instances where there are circumstances where an error has been made, when the information that has been bandied about initially, however ludicrous it may have been, turns out to be just that, confirmed in that status, has got to be retracted, has got to be identified as being wrong, so that people know not only about what the truth is in these instances, that yes, indeed, our president is very much alive, doing some very important things, by the way, that we'll talk about in connection with his present service as our chief executive. Completely wrong information. People need to be held responsible for these things, and it is appropriate. It is appropriate to dismiss these folks who advance these conspiracy theories as being incredible, and not continuing to listen to them, consume the items, the misinformation that they do in fact provide. Some very interesting information about what is out there today when it comes to conspiracy theorists and the misinformation that they convey on a regular basis, and once again, their refusal when confronted by it to back down and to tell America that they were wrong. A significant commentary on where we are today in America, certainly here in the state of Wisconsin, as we continue to rely upon people in the know, people in reliable news organizations to tell us what we should in fact know. Let's talk now about some things that we do know are true based upon reliable checked resources, things that we can rely upon in understanding the world around us. Yesterday, the United States Department of Justice, the entity, the agency for which I worked previously, provided some information about a significant charge that it had made, charging a Pakistani man who had recently visited Iran with trying to hire a hitman to assassinate political figures in the U.S. that investigators believe were potential targets, likely including former President Donald Trump and perhaps others. No insignificant charge here. The man, his name, again, charged by the Department of Justice, his name is Yasif Raza Merchant. And when we come back here on the Maggie Dawn Show, we'll tell you more about that and also take your calls at 855-752-4842 as we talk about reliable news here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media.
Keep on running, cause the winner don't quit on themselves.
I feel the earth move under my feet. I feel the sky tumbling down.
This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media. My name is Jim Santel, sitting in for Maggie today in this hour and also the next hour, talking about what is reliable and what is not reliable out there, talking about misinformation and credible information about what we know in America. Talking in particular about this major report that impacts potentially the ways in which candidates behave and are out there in the public. Justice Department, the Attorney General yesterday announcing the charges, federal charges brought by a Pakistani man. Again, his name is Asif Razad Mershant. He's 46 years old, arrested in New York on July 12th, just one day before that 20-year-old, his name is Matthew Crooks, he shot at and wounded Donald Trump during that rally in Pennsylvania. The officials, in reporting on the arrest of Mershant here in the United States, believing that he is attempting to put together assassinations of political leaders in our nation, said they had no evidence connecting this particular plot by Mershant with what Crooks had done there in Brooklyn, in Pennsylvania. But nonetheless, the timing of all of this and the need for focus and attention on this kind of activity. U.S. intelligence agencies in particular were tracking a potential Iranian assassination plot against Donald Trump in the weeks before the assassination attempt that prompted the Secret Service, as we know now, to enhance security for him and for others on the campaign trail. According to the information that was provided by the Department of Justice just yesterday, Mershant, again the defendant in this case, these federal charges, orchestrated a plot to assassinate U.S. government officials and steal information on U.S. soil. After spending some time in Iran, the charges indicate, Mershant, the defendant here, flew from Pakistan to the United States of America to recruit here some hitmen to carry out his scheme. Now, all this is supported by an affidavit, again, based upon the investigation by the FBI. That's how charges are brought initially on a criminal complaint, ultimately indicted by a grand jury. And in the affidavit that supports these charges against this defendant, the FBI agent who's responsible for bringing together all of this information said that the tradecraft and operational security measures that were employed by this particular defendant were consistent with the actions of someone plotting on behalf of a foreign adversary. Those are carefully worded statements, and they are significant because of the connection, plainly, between our politics and our government and campaigns here for those positions in government and the potential involvement of foreign nations. This particular agent who's supporting this affidavit that provides information about the charges against Mershant likened Mershant's actions to the foiled plot by Iranian operatives to murder John Bolton. Remember that? He was a former national security advisor under Donald Trump in revenge for the 2020 killing of Qasem Soleimani. Soleimani, as you may also recall, was a high-ranking member of Iran's Revolutionary Guard, all that in a U.S. drone attack in Iraq. The United States Department of Justice, the FBI, apparently, according to the reporting, coming out of the U.S. Department of Justice, investigating this fellow Mershant for weeks before they arrested him in Brooklyn as he attempted to leave the country from New York. They relayed details of this case to other federal agencies, good communication there, which is what agencies should do, including the Secret Service and others. All of them a part of this broader investigation. After arriving in the United States here in April, according once again to the complaint that supports the charges in this matter, the defendant contacted a person who he thought could help him carry out his plans, his assassination plans, which also included organizing protests of American treatment of Muslim countries. A lot of things going on here. Again, a lot of things, an attempt, plainly, to undermine not only safety and security of our campaigning candidates, but of also of our general communities out there. Instead, that contact quickly told law enforcement. That's what often happens in these cases. And became a confidential informant. And that's how much of this then plays out. As a result of that, in early June, Mershant traveled from Texas to New York to visit that person and laid out this scheme that's now charged in this criminal complaint against him that included some targeted assassinations of people, again, according to the complaint, who are hurting Pakistan and the Muslim world. Again, all this according to this informant. He offered to pay this particular informant, this person, $5,000 is a down payment on a potential $100,000 fee under the guise of some kind of a dyed rug business. He also claimed to be a representative for other conspirators outside the United States of America, but did not specify who those handlers were. He offered to channel the money through an informal network in Dubai or Istanbul. Those filings, again, released just yesterday by the U.S. Department of Justice, not indicating if Mershant revealed who he was working with in particular, but said that he had wives in Pakistan and Iran and had traveled to Iraq in recent years. Did not say the targets, did not identify the targets whom he wanted to assassinate in his discussions with this informant. But he did say the reason for the charges against him, that he hoped to consummate, to effect this killing or killings in late August or early September. He specified that he was not targeting what he described as normal people, and instead said the political figures he had in mind were prominent enough to warrant security details. And again, all of this coming out of the criminal complaint. The targets apparently included current and former U.S. officials and the Bureau's leadership, the FBI leadership itself. Said in recent testimony before Congress that plainly candidates for the presidency, including Donald Trump, long-standing targets of threats from Iran. Mershant apparently encouraged this informant, this fellow who turned to the law enforcement of the federal government, encouraged the informant to travel to Iran, personally and said that he had gotten permission from higher-ups to finalize these assassination plots here in America. During a trip to New York, Mershon asked the informant to drive him around to clubs in Brooklyn to recruit some potential hitmen and other people to engage for an unspecified amount of money in some of these criminal schemes that could earn participants up to $1 million, according to the criminal complaint here. It was on that trip, according to the criminal complaint, once again, that the informant introduced Mershon to two people who were represented as killers for hire, but who were in fact undercover federal operatives working with the FBI. That's how all this gets unraveled. Mershon, apparently a part of this scheme, stopped by our good law enforcement authorities in the federal system. Undeniably, lots of cooperation here. That's how these things always happen. Stopped in his plot that may have implicated others overseas and indeed other foreign governments that may have been out there as well. All of this very chilling. Thank goodness that this good investigative work, again, advanced also by prosecutors in the Department of Justice, addressing these issues, brings this to a particular close. More on that and on the importance, once again, of accurate information and inaccurate information when the Maggie Dawn Show here in the broadcast stations of Civic Media continues this afternoon. My name is Jim Santel. This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media. My name is Jim Santel, sitting in for Maggie Dawn for this hour and next hour as well, focusing a lot of our attention, our discussion today on what is true and what is not true, relying upon good and decent and reliable sources of information, also muddied by those people who would perpetuate and peddle misinformation into our public domains. As always, taking your questions, your inquiries, your comments here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media at 855-752-4842. My excellent producer, Jess, also reminds me that you can drop your comments also into the Civic Media app and communicate with us that way as well. And so all of this, a part of our discussion this afternoon involving you in particular. That includes a caller from Merrimack. Jack, you've been on the line for a while. Be a part of our conversation this afternoon, calling in about comments about disinformation and reliability out there in the public domain. Glad to have you with me, Jack.
Thank you. Yes, I wanted to point out, I read a recent article about this repeated lies and more lies and misinformation and misdirection. And the article said basically the purpose of all this stuff is not necessarily to get people to believe those lies. I mean, a lot of me, I would suspect that at least half of the Trump cultists even don't even, you know, believe him when he said, yeah, that, you know, I won the 2020 election. However, there's so much misinformation out there that this purpose is to confuse people and to even have them doubt information for which there's ample evidence and, you know, which has been published, you know, things like Project 2025, which, you know, people look at that and they say, oh, that's not real. They're not really going to do that. Yeah, they sure are going to do that if they get in.
Right. Jack, a very important point to make, which is the purposes are nefarious, right? They're undermining basic understandings about how we know what we know. And you're right. They're designed, even if in themselves, they're not intended to convey a sense of truth, intended to confuse people. It could not identify a better verb out there to confuse people, to make them think, well, gee, if that is obviously untrue, maybe these other things are also untrue, and therefore I disbelieve virtually everything, or I pick and choose what I want to believe, and that is equally dangerous, right? And so the purposes behind doing all this, again, and not only contrary to who we are as a nation, the notion that as we discuss things in the public domain, we've got to be able to rely upon fundamental facts. We can be corrected along the way, but the only way to engage in thoughtful and meaningful and productive discourse is to rely upon the truth. If in fact, you've got these people out there who are doing that to sow this discontent, this disbelief, this disinformation that you identify as a means of undermining generally all of it, and even those things that are true, what an incredibly destructive mission that is. Shame on all of them, right, Jack? Appreciate very much the call and the information, the perspective on what is really going on here in America. We do know that there are reliable news sources out there, and it does take critical thinking. It does take critical thinking by all of us to identify that which is outrageously preposterous and those things which are credible. And when we know that they are supported by sources and identified people, when they are reported based upon facts, information, sometimes documents, sometimes presented in court, sometimes presented in the public domain generally, more reliability. Absent those kinds of things, more reason to disbelieve the kinds of things that are out there. And so, Jack, once again, appreciate your comments here on the Maggie Dawn Show as we think about those things that we know and those things that are not true and those things that we need to distinguish between the two of those kinds of categories. In connection with things that we do know and that are the products of good reporting and discovery by journalists, often in the public domain, produced by government into the public domain, a very interesting story coming out of Arizona brings us back to very current things and once again the present campaign, but also past elections as well. The 2020 election still animating a lot of our discussion these days in this 2024 presidential election. We know that in the state of Arizona, a grand jury did in fact indict fake electors in that state. We know that there have been other charging officials in other states, including right here in Wisconsin, that have charged people who are architects for that fake elector scheme. But just yesterday and the day before, information coming out from the grand jury, which again is the process by which charges like this are reviewed and then presented into the public domain, some very interesting information about what the grand jurors did and did not want to do in this particular case. And then some additional information about the status of that fake elector's case there in the state of Arizona. So two reliable stories this afternoon coming out of the state of Arizona. The state grand jury in Arizona, again, according to information reliably released into the public domain, some commentary, again, by the prosecutors themselves. That state, of course, had charged 18 people this past spring, you may remember that, in one of these election interference schemes. And that scheme, of course, was seeking to overturn the 2020 election that did in fact result in the election of our president, Joe Biden, and the defeat of Donald Trump in that process. And the information coming out of the grand jury notes and records, fascinating, because normally under routine circumstances, grand jury information, whether it's in the federal system or the state system, is not released to the public domain. We do not get access to these things. But nonetheless, information provided into the public domain indicates that as this grand jury, again, the people responsible for reviewing the evidence and determining whether there is probable cause to find that charges should issue against one or more people, the grand jury in that particular instance, in that state, reviewing this fake elector case, also wanted to indict Donald Trump. And prosecutors in this particular instance, this particular event that happened, recommended, however, that Donald Trump not be charged. And the reason for their doing that, according to all these records coming out of Arizona now, is that the Justice Department policy that it discourages bringing state and federal charges against the same defendant that are largely based upon similar facts. And that is true. There is indeed a policy that assumes that there is communication and even some cooperation among state and federal authorities. It is not a policy that absolutely mandates that the state defer to the federal government. But in many instances, the question, as we often ask here on the Maggie Dawn Show and other broadcasts of civic media, is what are the ultimate purposes of justice? What are the ultimate purposes of prosecution? And if the purpose is indeed to accomplish the identification of criminal conduct, it may well be that under certain circumstances, a decision by federal authorities, for example, to indict an individual, that decision should take precedence over a state decision with respect to the same defendant. And so it appears that in this particular case, even though the grand jurors wanted to indict Donald Trump in that state matter, the prosecutors chose to follow this Department of Justice policy, not mandated, but follow the policy nonetheless, and deferred to the federal prosecution. And of course, we know that federal prosecution already underway. That's the case that is pending right now in front of Tanya Chutkan. She is the federal district court judge in the District of Columbia. She has got before her now that 4-count indictment charging Donald Trump alone, the singular defendant in that case, again returned by a federal grand jury in that case, charging him with election interference, conspiracies, violation of civil rights. That's the case that the judge has before her right now, following that immunity decision coming out of the Supreme Court. And so it appears that while that was pending, even though the grand jurors in the state of Arizona were inclined to authorize the return of a grand jury indictment, the document that charges individuals with state crimes in Arizona, they wanted apparently to indict Donald Trump. They chose, at the recommendation of the prosecutors there, not to do so. The court papers specifically in this reporting, they were filed in Phoenix just this past week by the Arizona Attorney General's Office. And once again, to be very clear, the Attorney General's Office, that is not the federal Attorney General. His name is Merrick Garland. This is the state Attorney General. They revealed nonetheless for the first time that the grand jurors were investigating, hearing evidence, reviewing documents, presumably getting the same kinds of things that were also presented to the federal grand jury in the District of Columbia. They're reviewing all of that, including allegations of interference in that state's, in Arizona's election process, that they seriously considered, according to these reports, bringing charges against Donald Trump. Some of the grand jurors even appeared to be upset when a state prosecutor suggested that based upon this policy of deference to the federal authorities, that they should not do so. And so what the papers confirm, again, a prosecutor, the comments attributed to that prosecutor said this: I have not recommended that in the draft indictment, we'll get back to that in just a moment, despite clear indications from you, he's talking to the grand jurors, that there is an interest in pursuing a charge against him, I recommend that you not include Donald Trump in this indictment. Now, how does that work? And what is he talking about? Well, he's talking about the fact that the grand jurors ultimately are the ones who decide what the charges are. They're the ones who investigate the case. That is true in Arizona in the state system. It is true in our federal system as well. As I have often spoken about here on the broadcast stations of civic media, here on the Maggie Dawn Show and in other broadcasts, the whole process is dependent upon the notion that we have people called in from the community there in Phoenix, in Washington, D.C., in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, in Madison, in other places around our nation, who are called in to determine whether or not there is probable cause to believe that a crime has been committed and that an indictment should issue. And if indeed the grand jury says, you know what, we think it should not issue, the grand jury indictment does not issue. That is a discretion that does, in fact, need to be presented to the grand jury as a part of this process as it goes forward. And so all of this revealed during the course of these documents just this past week. And when the grand jury says, you know what, we would like to go ahead and indict in this case, it is routine. It is routine for a prosecutor who's engaged with them, understanding what their concerns are, understanding where they feel strongly that the evidence is compelling or not compelling, will then go back and on behalf of the grand jury will actually draft the indictment, the actual papers. And so, for example, in the 4-count indictment that was returned by a federal grand jury in the District of Columbia. What happened there is the grand jury reviews the evidence, and in consultation with the prosecutor, his name once again, Jack Smith, he's the special counsel assigned by the attorney general to lead that case. The grand jury then directs the special counsel there, the prosecutor generally, the federal prosecutor, to put together a proposed indictment. And it is that indictment that the grand jury can either accept in whole or in part, can make edits to it, can change it, and do other things that are consistent with the grand jury's own assessment of what should happen here. And the reason why this is an important thing to note, even inside this Arizona case, this reliable information coming out from the prosecutors themselves, is that when I was a prosecutor, on a handful, not many, but a handful of occasions, even after presentations to the grand jury told me and told other prosecutors during the course of many, many decades, many, many times of appearances before of prosecutors before the grand jury, that the grand jury does not concur. The grand jury has that complete responsibility to tell the prosecutors what the charges should be. And if they determine in the end that those charges should not issue, it's their responsibility to tell the prosecutor we're not going ahead. On a handful of occasions, I will not report publicly what those cases were all about, but those cases were in fact an affirmation the process works. And it also works in Arizona, in D.C., in other places around the country. I want to talk more about this Arizona grand jury case and also update you on exactly what's going on beyond this information. Peels back a little bit about what's going on in the grand jury process there in Arizona. We'll talk more about the status of that Arizona case as the Maggie Dawn Show continues here on the broadcast stations of Civic Media. This is the Maggie Dawn Show. My name is Jim Santel, sitting in this afternoon, this hour, and next hour as well for Maggie, talking about reliable information coming out from reliable sources, contrasting that, as we often need to do in America, with those things that are not reliable. Talking in particular about this Arizona case that is running parallel to the other actions that are out there. As you well know, in the past year or so, five states, including Arizona, have filed criminal cases focusing on this fake elector scheme. These people get together, including right here in Wisconsin, and purport to be the actual electors when in fact they are not, putting together documents, various kinds of documents in the various states, and attempting, in some cases successful, in getting those to Washington, D.C., attempting to further undermine the process of counting the true electoral votes there in Washington, D.C. on January 6th. That fake elector scheme, again, the focus of a lot of prosecution out there, including review by federal grand juries and now also state grand juries, including that one right there in Arizona. In only one case filed in Georgia, only one state case, has the grand jury formally included Donald Trump among the defendants. Like the case in Arizona, the other proceedings in Michigan, Nevada, Wisconsin have identified him only as an unindicted co-conspirator, which is, again, commonplace when the decision is made not to indict a particular individual by name, but indicate that they had a major role to play somehow in the process, in the events, in the circumstances of the particular case. Now, the Arizona case, what is the status of that? Where is that right now? Initially filed by Chris Mace, who was the state attorney general at that time, like the other cases, not at all expected to go to trial, probably until next year at the very earliest. In June, the defendants filed their opening challenges to the charges, which is what defense counsel and defendants can do, part of our system to ensure the government presents a credible and compelling case. And they seized on a new state law aimed at curbing litigation and prosecutions involving political figures. And again, that will be the subject of review by the district court judge, the trial judge, who's presiding over that. Plainly, defense counsel attacking the legitimacy of the grand jury indictment that was, in fact, returned on that basis. On Monday, the state attorney general, Chris Mays, said that she had secured her first cooperation deal in this case. And she announced in particular that Jenna Ellis, a name that we know from other settings out there, who had played a major role in Donald Trump's efforts to remain in power, had agreed to testify. She had agreed to testify against other defendants in that state case. Now, we know she's doing that as well in Georgia, and that she pled guilty in Georgia in that state case as well, reaching a similar sort of a likewise cooperation deal with prosecutors there. That is not at all unusual. Again, she is one of the named defendants in Arizona, also in Georgia. To bring to a nearer conclusion the charges against her, what does she do? She comes forward and she admits, as she did very publicly in Georgia, that she has done the crimes that are alleged in that grand jury indictment. And she comes forward and she also says that I will agree to cooperate. I'll agree to cooperate with the government, in this case, Chris Mays, who's, again, the attorney general there, the state prosecutor, in providing additional information. And that's exactly what the process can contemplate and does contemplate. Entirely possible that the attorney general, Chris Mays, will present testimony from Jenna Ellis in a grand jury in Arizona there. Questions asked of her certainly about how it is this happened. Who was responsible? Who came up with the initial plan? We know a lot of that already, or at least we think we know a lot of that based upon the indictments already issued in the federal system in those other cases. But further confirmation from somebody who was there, someone who was engaged with these other defendants in the very scheme to put all this together. Questions about when those meetings took place. What was said? What did you say? What kinds of agreements were effectuated? What kinds of things were said to the fake electors themselves to convince them to sign off on these documents that were obviously false? Who created those kinds of documents? How did those come about? What was the purpose? What was the intent in doing that? And who said what when? This intent aspect, very important for any cooperator like Jenna Ellis, both in Georgia and now also in Arizona, to confirm on behalf of the prosecution. Why? Because that's central to any criminal prosecution out there. You want to ensure not only that a successful prosecution is premised upon the criminal acts having been undertaken, they were accomplished, they were effected, but also that they were done with an intent, a purposeful design, a motive, an intention to commit the crime, to accomplish some illegal end. And that's exactly what the Arizona indictment says. That's what the Arizona grand jury found in this particular case. It's also what the Georgia grand jury found and what the District of Columbia grand jury found as well. All of that, a part of the process. Jenna Ellis now, among the individuals appearing in front of the grand jury, the first cooperation deal in that case. On Tuesday, a second cooperation agreement also became public. Lorraine Pellegrino, who's a fake elector in Arizona, pleaded guilty to a misdemeanor charge of filing a false instrument, and she will avoid jail time as a part of her cooperation agreement there, based upon her agreement, her contract, if you will, with the government, pleading guilty to this misdemeanor charge of filing a false instrument, avoiding jail time by doing so. Ms. Pellegrino was a Phoenix area activist who acted as a secretary of the Arizona fake electors. Again, somebody who would know about how this happened, what happened at the time, how did this all take place? And all of this then provided, this information provided to a grand jury that does indeed have a continuing investigative purpose, an assignment potentially to indict other people. Big news coming out of Arizona on this fact, this fake elector case, based upon the facts as we know them reliably. Why? Because they come from the prosecutors themselves, documents to support these things, and also the status of the case itself, plainly being prosecuted by the attorney general and resulting in two individuals, Jenna Ellis and Ms. Pellegrino, now coming forward pleading guilty and cooperating with the prosecuting authorities in that jurisdiction. No small events there in Arizona, even as the other cases are variously moving and not moving forward, as we have talked before. The Georgia case right now, sort of the parallel to the Arizona case, pretty much on hold. That case pending in front of Judge Scott McAfee in Fulton County, while an appeals court reviews his decision
about whether Fani Willis could continue to remain in the case. He decided yes. As we continue with the Maggie Dawn Show, more on what's going on in America, justice, and the aspiration for it here in the broadcast stations of Civic Media.